7791. Dan, would you give us a brief overview of the bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, House Bill 3791 just received a minimal fiscal impact. Your SMS that you have in your packet indicates not issued yet, but in fact it is minimal fiscal impact and there is no revenue impact on this bill. It authorizes rulemaking for the Oregon Department of Transportation to limit the administrative fee, document processing, fee handling, that a vehicle dealer may charge a purchaser of a vehicle. It sets a maximum of $50 for the administrative fee, increases the amount of the required surety bond or letter of credit for a vehicle dealer to possess from $25,000 to $30,000 effective September 2002, and it increases that from $30,000 to $35,000 effective September 2003. There is a dash one gut and stuff amendment, and it limits the amount of the claim by a person other than a consumer. Again, it limits the claim of a person other than a consumer, retail consumer, to $20,000 against a bond upon the passage of this bill. It also retains the increase of the required amount of the surety bond or letter of credit for years 2002 and 2003. And for the September 1st, 2004, it increases the required amount of the surety bond or letter of credit from $35,000 to $40,000. This committee drafted this measure as a method to provide greater consumer protection in vehicle purchase transactions. Members of the committee, if you'll reflect and remember House Bill 2209, which was the recovery fund bill. And essentially, this bill was drafted out of testimony and thoughts by the chair with regard to increasing consumer protections in a different method. Provides legislation, previous legislation provided incremental bond amounts in the years 2000 to 2002 to provide better protection for consumers realizing increasing amounts of financial loss where dealer fraud had occurred. Oregon Department of Justice states that the current bond amount scheme does not provide sufficient claim amount for injured consumers, particularly where multiple claim amounts against the dealer's bond exceeds the face value of a bond or the letter of credit. This measure provides additional consumer protection in that it limits the amount of that a non-consumer may claim against a surety bond, regardless of the bond amount. Currently, most certified vehicle dealers charge purchasers up to a $35 administrative fee to process transaction documents and fees. Increasing the administrative fee charged to purchasers may provide revenue for vehicle dealers towards increased cost of higher level of required bond or letter of credit. There, the dash one is attached to it, and again, it essentially guts and stuffs it, but I've tried to encapsulate what it does listed under the committee amendment portion of your SMS.
Yeah, committee members, you might remember that we heard the AG's recovery fund bill probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. And this is an alternative approach to that recovery fund. What we're looking at doing is requiring dealers to up the total amount of their bond that consumers who are injured can claim on. And then we're also, through the Dash 1 amendments, we're limiting the amount that non-consumers can claim on the bond up to $20,000, which I believe is the current bond level. This measure will step the bond gradually up to $40,000, but also allow some increase in the vehicle dealer fee for the processing of paperwork to a maximum of $50. Okay, let's see, Mr. Darrell Fuller.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Fuller. I represent the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. We've been working in cooperation with the Attorney General's Office, bonding companies, and the chair of the committee in developing the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. And my comments will be essentially on the bill with the Dash 1 amendments included. The bill does three things. First, it increases the bond from the current amount of $20,000 to a maximum of $40,000 in $5,000 increments per year. A bill was passed 2 years ago that took the bond from $15,000 to $25,000 with a $5,000 increase from $20,000 to $25,000 occurring in September of this year. So it was passed 2 years ago. It won't be implemented until September of this year. So this bill takes it from $25,000 in September of this year up to $40,000 in $5,000 a year increments. The second thing the bill does is restrict access to the bond above $20,000 to consumers only. Something that we learned in the 1999 session is that because the bond is available to anybody having a claim against a dealership that has failed, and because banks, lending institutions, and other dealers are generally aware of a dealership failure before consumers are aware of it, dealers were getting about 80% of the value of the bond in a failure, and consumers were only getting about 20% of the bond. So a bond that was designed to be essentially consumer protection was essentially paying off other lenders and other dealers, and consumers weren't getting much benefit. So on a $20,000 bond, the consumers who were hurt by a dealership failure would only see $5,000 of that $20,000 bond or less. So by restricting access to bonding amounts over $20,000 to consumers only, by the time we get to a $40,000 bond, where consumers have exclusive access to $20,000 of that bond, we are essentially quadrupling the consumer protection in a very short number of years, from $5,000, which is what consumers are realizing today, to $20,000 or more. Now, it doesn't restrict consumers from having access to the other $20,000 of that $40,000. Consumers will fight it out with other lending institutions and other dealers for the original $20,000 of the bond. But anything over that $20,000 would be accessed to consumers who were hurt only. So that's a quadrupling of consumer protection based on where we were at 2 years ago. Now, the history of this is that the bond had not been increased prior to 1999. The last time it was increased prior to that was 1953. So you have a $15,000 bond in 1953 that wasn't changed until 1999. Imagine the erosion in the value of that bond over that period of time. So to get the legislature to move last session and this session to making what is a pretty substantial increase in the bond over a short period of time has been pretty dramatic move forward. And we're very helpful, we're very pleased to support that. Our association supports a bond increase up to $50,000 eventually. There are other stakeholders in this that have problems with going to $50,000, but $40,000 gets us quite a bit of the way there. The final part of the bill is a change in a fee that dealers charge consumers, may charge consumers, we're not required to, a fee that dealers may charge consumers for processing title and registration paperwork and collecting fees on their behalf for Department of Motor Vehicles. Currently, we're allowed to charge $35, and that charge is listed in a Department of Justice administrative rule on advertising guidelines. Now, how a rule permitting a fee got stuck into an advertising guideline rule, I'm not quite sure. It happened before I was around. But that fee has been there for a while and has not been changed. The Department of Justice believes that it's more appropriate for that fee to be in statute, and we agree. And we also believe it makes more sense for that fee to be listed in Department of Transportation statute, since we're collecting Department of Transportation money. So we're moving the fee from rule to statute, and in cooperation with the Attorney General, we agreed to move the fee from $35 to $50. That fee has not been increased in a number of years. Most of that is simply inflationary value. It sets the fee at $50. It also allows the Department of Transportation, by rule, to increase the fee if necessary. And the reason why we added that rulemaking authority to the Department of Transportation in the -1 amendments is we don't want to have a position where we're coming back to the legislature every 2 or 4 years asking for incremental increases in a fee that essentially is not a tax. It is not something that you collect. It is something that the dealers may charge consumers for the consumer benefit of filling out that paperwork. And so it allows the Department of Transportation, through their rulemaking authority, to make changes in that fee. Part of the reason why that's important to dealers is because the Department of Transportation is trying to move forward to a process of allowing dealers to do electronic lien and titling and delivering plates and stickers at the dealership. When those programs are online, there's going to be a lot of more computer transactions at the dealership site where we'll be interfacing directly with DMV computers to input information instead of handing them forms and having them key punch the information themselves. When we do that, the process will require us to have a contract with what the statute calls an integrator, who will be the middleman between the DMV and dealers and banks for transacting this information. And when that occurs, we're going to be paying extra money to this integrator in order to do these transactions on the consumer's benefit. and we want to be in a position to recoup our hard costs through rule rather than waiting for the legislature to convene again to start recouping our costs in terms of the administrative fee. So the bill does three things. It increases the bond. It protects consumers by quadrupling the amount of money available to them through the bond, and it moves our fee from rule to statute and modifies the fee from $35 to $50. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions. And I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fuller, you're just going to need to get a little elementary with me just to explain exactly what a bond means to a vehicle dealer and how that translates into, just explain exactly what a bond is for a vehicle dealer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Monis Anderson, a bond is somewhat similar to insurance. Except that, well, first of all, a bond is required in order for a dealer to get a license. So, number one, in order for a dealer to get a license to sell vehicles, they have to present a bond to the Department of Transportation, and the bond has to be made out in the name of the Department of Transportation for whatever that amount is. Currently, the amount is $20,000. A bonding company simply certifies the Department of Transportation that the dealer has the assets available. Should there be claims against the dealer, okay, which would be a court case that would be result in a claim against the dealer for fraudulent activities dealing with titling and registration of vehicles. So you go to a dealership, you buy a car, you give them the license and registration fees, and instead of giving that money to DMV, the dealer puts it in his pocket. So then now you do not have the registration for your vehicle, and you do not have the title for your vehicle that you've paid for. Okay? So you would have a claim against that dealer for misappropriating that money. Okay? The dealership disappears for whatever reason. He goes out of business, he goes to Mexico, or whatever he decides to do with that money that he's collected. Okay? You can then, by suing the dealer and getting your judgment reduced to a claim, you can now make that claim against the bond and receive compensation from the bond because you can't collect from the dealer because he's gone out of business. Now, the difference between a bond and insurance is you have a health insurance policy that pays out claims when you go to see a doctor, right? And they pay based on your monthly premium. A bond, on the other hand, has an indemnity agreement with the bond, with the company that has the bond, that essentially says, if I have to pay money out as the bondholder for you, you as the business now have to pay me back. So the bondholder is simply certifying that they believe that this person has the financial stability to have liquid assets of up to $20,000 or $40,000, whatever it is. The bond company is saying, we trust this guy. You're required to have that bond in order to be licensed.
I think the other thing is, maybe you did point this out in your testimony, if you have a claim against your bond and you have to pay $20,000, you have to come back then and re-up your bond back to whatever the maximum is, or the required minimum is, very quickly, isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I think the experience would be that if a bond ever pays out a claim, the dealer essentially would lose their bonding and they would lose their dealer's license. It is a tremendous incentive for dealers to pay claims made against them because the dealers don't want the consumer or lending institution or other dealer to go against their bond, because if they go against the bond, the first thing the bonding company is going to do is they're going to realize they've got exposure. They're going to cancel the current bond to limit their exposure beyond the $20,000 or whatever it is, and that dealer, as soon as DMV has noted that the bond has been canceled, the DMV is going to yank their license. So there's a real heavy carrot and stick there for the bonded dealer to pay out their claims. So
the bond is
only be
guarantee.
In those... Yeah. It would only be in those cases when a dealership no longer has funds available or you can't figure out how to get to the funds because the dealer has said moved to Switzerland or whatever, that the bond would actually pay out a claim.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fuller, I have a couple of questions for you. Why is it that you're taking this graduated approach to increasing the bond? Why don't you just increase it to 40 grand right now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, to eliminate opposition to the bill.
Good answer.
That's telling it like it is. Secondly, I noticed there's no increase in fees for bonding of dealers in motorcycles and mopeds and those sorts of things. Is that because there's just not a problem in that industry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I don't represent Department of Transportation, so I can't tell you if there has or hasn't been a problem. I'm not aware of a problem, and Mr. Hughes, who represents the motorcycle dealers, would probably be better to answer that question, but I would anticipate there probably is not a problem in that area.
Mr. Hughes, would you like to respond to Representative Walker's question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed Hughes, Oregon Motorcycle Dealers Association, Oregon Power Sports Dealers Association. Affirmative.
Thank you.
I'm getting nervous. Grounded.
What was that answer?
Affirmative.
Oh, affirmative. And I had, yes, I know there. I had one final question, if I might, Mr. Chair. Am I to understand that you've worked with the AG and all parties to get this bill, and does that essentially mean we're going to tube the other bill that the AG came forward to our committee with?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, this doesn't have anything to do with that other bill. The AG's office supports increases in the bond because that increases support or protection for consumers. The Attorney General's office also agrees on the move from the administrative rule to statute and has agreed that the $50 fee as opposed to a $35 fee is a reasonable fee for dealers to receive to recoup their costs of doing titling and registration. If the Attorney General's office were here, and I'm surprised they're not, they would tell you this is a good bill, but it doesn't go nearly as far as they would like to go in terms of consumer protection, in that their recovery fund would provide $250,000 of consumer-only recovery in case of a dealership failure. So while quadrupling the protection that consumers receive, which is what this bill will ultimately do, is a good step in the right direction, they would consider it a good small step. So it's just a matter of looking down two different ends of the same telescope.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Representative Bates.
Mr. Chair, I think you've actually answered one of my questions. I'm not great in math, and I don't remember 1952 well. I have to admit, unfortunately, I was alive then. $15,000 then, and whatever it would be now on an inflationary basis, obviously a lot more than $40,000. So my real question is, have you had experience with dealerships failing and lawsuits entailing, and then what kind of recovery people said actually on their money? I mean, is it a dollar for a dollar or 10 cents on the dollar? Have you had any experience as far as that goes and what it means with these kind of bonding issues? You've got a dealership that goes out, you've got a lot of people looking for the money. And do they get their money back, or do they only get a fraction of it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bates, of course, none of my dealers ever go out. I wish I could say that's true, but that's not. The Attorney General, when they testified when you held your hearing on the recovery fund, if you'll look back at your testimony on that bill, I think you will find that they provided you some statistical information on dealerships that did fail, many of them to the tune of more than $40,000, so that the consumers would not be recovering completely. In fact, they would tell you that at $250,000, consumers would not always be kept whole. I did do the numbers from 1951 or 53 up through 1999, and the bond would be in excess of $250,000 today if it kept pace with inflation. I can tell you that even most of my larger dealers would have a difficult time paying for and meeting the requirements necessary for a $250,000 bond. That's a pretty onerous amount. So I don't think we're ever going to get there when it took us four decades to get $10,000 increase on the bond. But you would have to discuss with the Attorney General's office in terms of the losses. I can tell you with the there have been one or two in the last 20 or 30 years of franchise dealers that have failed. And in those cases, consumers are much better protected in that the manufacturer, in order to maintain goodwill with his customers, often comes in and rescues the consumers from their dealer. Where in the cases of a used car dealer where they don't have that kind of backing from a manufacturer, the consumers are in a much more precarious position. On the other hand, that's not to implicate Monty's members. On the other hand, when you're talking about new cars, you're generally talking about more expensive cars and higher losses. So I would imagine that if one of my dealers were to fail, the potential dollar amount for a new car failure would probably be higher than the potential amount for a used car dealer failure.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Fuller?
Yes, Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, just wanted to say to Mr. Fuller that it's nice to have a bill before this committee where all the parties agree.
Well, that's kind of new. Okay, thank you, Darrell. Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Monty King. I'm executive director of the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. In a manila envelope up at each one of your places, you have all my testimony in the order in which the bills are going to be up today. Should have your name and my scratchy handwriting on it. And the very first one is House Bill 3791. I'm not going to read this for you, but on the second and third page of that testimony, I have gone through and initialed and detailed out a lot of the expenses of what is costing dealers money. And those are significant costs. I've been working on this basically ever since I became executive director. Spent a lot of time with AG's office last year and the rules process. They agreed, let's move it over, the administrative fee over. The bond question, to answer Representative Bates' question, it's okay when you're talking about a large dealer having a lot of money to pay for a $250,000 bond or even a $50,000 bond. But a lot of my members are very small people, one person, two people, maybe one employee. They could probably afford the cost of a $100,000 bond. It wouldn't be nice, but they could probably do it. But the fact of the matter is they couldn't qualify for the bond. And out of my 750 members, I think it would probably put 200 of them out of business. And I don't think that's what anybody here wants to do. That's really the key, not inflation from 1953, but just the availability. That was the biggest question for us. And that's why we want to take it in $5,000 increments over the next 4 years. Because if there is a problem in getting that bond, say in 2 years, we're going to come back and say, wait a minute. You know, it's really hurting our guys. They can afford it, but they can't get it. And maybe we need to slow down on this a little bit. So that's our reason for wanting a graduated increase.
Okay. Thank you, Monty. Any questions for Mr. King? Thank you for your testimony.
Well, yes.
Representative Monty Sanderson?
In your testimony here, you said that you really feel that the administrative fee should be allowed to be raised or lowered in the future, and basically this statute would say that it would cap at $50, but you are saying you're still okay even though that isn't your preference.
Daryl, do you have amendments on this, or is it?
Yeah, if you look at the Dash 1 amendments, Representative, but the Dash 1 amendments basically say the fee will go to $50, and it gives the department the authority by rule to increase the fee above $50 if it's a determination that's justified. The fee has been $35 for the last...
For as long as the fee is... Mr. Chairman, Daryl Fuller with the Auto Dealers Union. The fee was originally established at $35 in the early 1990s and has not been changed since then.
So roughly 10 years.
Yeah, and without the Dash 1 amendments are the ones that provide the consumer-only protection above $20,000. So without the Dash 1 amendments, you're not quadrupling the consumer protection, which is the ultimate goal of what we're doing here. So I strongly urge the committee to move the bill with the Dash 1 amendments.
Yeah, I took some responsibility for trying to put this together, and what I told them that we would allow some increase in the fee statutorily up to $50, but they had to agree to increase the bonding levels. And the fact that the fee hadn't been adjusted in almost 10 years, to me, was evidence that we needed to look at that. And by adjusting the bonding requirements, which is for particularly, I think, for some of Monty's members, it's a challenge. But what we're doing is we're increasing consumer protection and limiting financial institutions and other businesses to $20,000 of the bond. But if you look at the Dash 1 amendments, it provides for a minimum fee of $50 by statute, but that can be raised by rule if the department finds justification to increase it.
Thank you. I still can't find it, but I'll believe you.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, I know I was a little confused at first. So if you look in the Dash 1 amendments, Representative, on lines 1 through 5, and follow through the changes in the language into the bill in Section 1, you'll see what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Representative Garrard.
A question for the chair. Is there a cap on the administrative charge?
Statutorily, it's at $50, but the Department of Transportation can, by rule, raise it if it finds justification for increasing.
But is there some kind of cap that they can't raise it past without?
Actually not. They would have to hold a hearing and make a rule relative to any kind of an increase, and of course it would have to be justified to them. Right now they have the authority to see what's set by rules right now, and there's nothing to prohibit them from changing it by rule right now.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. As the fee currently sits, it's a $35 administrative rule with no ceiling and no floor. This moves it to $50, which creates a floor, allows it to go above that. As long as you've been in county and state government, I imagine you can understand how difficult it is to get a government body to increase a fee. So I would suggest to you that there is a pretty strong ceiling there, even though one isn't mentioned in statute.
I think you're very right, Mr. Fuller. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions for either of these witnesses? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else who would like to provide any public testimony today on House Bill 3791? Okay. If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3791, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3791. Do we have a motion on the Dash 1 amendments, first of all? Representative Garag.
Mr. Chair, I move we approve the Dash 1 amendments for House Bill 3791.
Representative Garag moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3791. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. Is there a motion on the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move to the floor House Bill 3791 with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrard moves House Bill 3791 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Walker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree this is a good bill, and I'm glad that you took the leadership to bring this forward, because we had that discussion when we were talking about the AG's recovery fund. We talked about the bonding. I just hope that this bill doesn't mean that the recovery fund idea is dead. I kind of have the suspicion that it is, and I see the smile on your face that tells me it is, because I think it's actually a good idea, but it was trying to bite off quite a bit that had a lot of objection. But we'll have that discussion on another day. At any rate, I think this is a good step forward. There have been viewerships that have folded in my community. I know in Dr. Bates's community, as well as in Coos Bay, because we've seen some of those in bankruptcy court, and consumers get the shaft. So this is a good step to help consumers not be in that situation.
Thank you. Senator Representative Bates?
I would also say that we've had a near failure in the Medford area, that the dealerships stuck it out and went to Chevrolet and got the thing taken care of in a way that protected consumers too. So that threat of losing the bond, threat of losing your dealership is really important. That does work.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions or other comments? Okay. Dan, you want to go ahead and call the roll?
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Crummel?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill 3791 goes to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation, and the chair will carry the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And close the work session on House Bill 3791.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I just have to smile back to you because my daughter just brought me my file on the recovery fund, and there's a note in here that I made to myself. And it says, I'm getting the sense that Chair Witt wants to limit who collects under the bonds instead of doing this recovery fund. So
that's true.
It was very perceptive of me, was it not?
Mr. Chair, do we need to enter her diary into the record?
Well, I'm a very upfront kind of guy, so I'm sure that came out in the testimony. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2638. And, Dan, you want to give us a brief overview?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, a brief overview of House Bill 2638. It has no revenue impact. It has no fiscal impact. And attached to the summary is a Dash 1 amendment and a Dash 2 amendment. It changes the requirement for a garage keeper or public parking operator to give notice to the owners listed on the vehicle title from 20 days to 2 days. in order to impose a lien for towage, care, storage of the abandoned or illegally parked vehicle. Changes the period of the required notification for immunity from civil liability on a garage keeper or public parking operator from 20 days to 2 days. Takes effective on passage for abandoned or illegally parked vehicles placed in storage. The Dash 1 amendment adds the requirement for the garage keeper to notify and request the title information for the owner of the out-of-state vehicle from the respective state motor vehicle department within 15 days, and to issue notice within 15 days from the date